One of my favorite TV shows of all time was 30 Rock, which chronicled the crazy adventures of what happened at the headquarters of NBC, which was 30 Rockefeller Center in New York City. And there was an episode that really stood out to me with Queen Latifah, who was the guest on that particular show. And she was playing the role of a congresswoman. And she was at a committee meeting on Capitol Hill, and she was going on and on about this topic until suddenly she kept on talking but had completely lost her train of thought, which she alluded to. And I'm going to quote from this here because it's funny. She said, "I may have lost my train of thought several minutes ago, but if I continue to talk like this, no one will notice. And when I stop, you will applaud my energy." And everybody burst into applause. So at that moment, her character was victorious because everybody was brought to their feet by her energy. But when you speak, would you consider it a victory if your audience comes away thinking, "Wow, what a great speaker," but had no idea what you said or even really cared what your message was in the first place? Today, I want to talk to you about why solid structure isn't just a nice to have, it's a need to have. Unless you want people to simply applaud your energy. Hi, I'm Karen Reed. I'm a four-time author, Emmy Award-winning broadcast journalist, and communication expert on helping people to own the room, whether it be a physical one or a virtual one. Welcome to Speaker Dynamics. What I shared with you in the introduction was a fictional scenario, somebody who might have been considered a fabulous speaker, but did not impart anything of value. But I actually had a real life example occur that I want to talk to you about as well, because perhaps you'll recognize it from some of your previous experiences. So I was at a conference and they had a really well-known keynote speaker. I was so excited to hear her. I'm not going to use the name because I don't think that would be fair, but you know, think about whoever you want to. This was a big name and she was talking about a topic that she had spoken a lot about and actually written a book about. So I'm in the audience, I'm watching her, and I'm thinking, yeah, wow, she is a really good speaker, you know, great intonation, great pauses, really good movement up on stage. So, you know, me being me, I'm looking at all like the technical aspects of communication and delivering an effective speech. But then I started trying to pull out what she was saying. What was her goal? What was she trying to impart? What were her key takeaways? And I wasn't coming up with anything. And I thought, huh, this is really kind of odd. I expected more from this very prestigious keynote speaker. And it got so bad that 45 minutes into it, she checked her watch and she said, "Oh, I have 15 more minutes. Let me see what else I can say." And at that point, my jaw drops. I'm like, whoa, okay, this person is being paid oodles of money. And she couldn't even put the time in to prepare well enough that she would be able to fill the entire hour with something of value. Like, that's terrible. And I thought, okay, maybe I'm just being too hard on her. So I decided to kind of test my hypothesis with people who were in the audience as well. And I said, "So what'd you think?" And they said, "Wow, she was a really great speaker." And I said, "Yeah, you know, what resonated with you? You know, what were some of the things that really, you know, stood out to you that she said?" And to a person, no one was able to come up with anything other than like the main topic of the speech, which was like basically a headline that, you know, was not even a message headline. It was a topic headline, you know, and I'm not going to say what it is because you might recognize who the speaker was. But all of this said to me, oh, geez, you know, this was a waste of money by this conference for one thing, but also just the importance of making sure that you craft your content in a way that your audience gets something out of it, because otherwise you're doing them a disservice. So your job when you speak, I would say 9 times out of 10, is to deliver a valuable message. And sometimes it's of critical importance, sometimes it's not as critical, but regardless, your job is to deliver a message that's valuable and ensure that is understood by your audience. You want to focus on the audience and their needs, not on how much you are entertaining them. You are not an entertainer in that moment. You are an educator, and your job is to teach them something that they need to know. And it should be taking the pressure off of your shoulders to be a performer and actually putting the focus outward on your audience. Are they understanding what you're saying? Are they getting it? Are you leaving them with something that is valuable? So most great teachers have a lesson plan, right? It's a structure that they've created that they're going to follow to teach the topic of the day. Well, today I'm going to share my lesson plan, my suggested content framework that I'm going to walk you through. There's a lot that I'm going to be passing along. Don't worry. At the end, I'll give you a way to kind of harness the good news from today that you can keep for afterwards as a reference point. But allow me to just kind of walk you through this content framework that I share with all of my clients. And I hope that you can apply it to any sort of communication that you do, whether it be an informal just conversation or a more formal presentation. So it begins with simplifying your message, not dumbing it down, but putting it into a form that allows the person on the other side to receive it as easily as possible, because it's a lot easier to talk about something for a long period of time than it is to kind of cull it down to its critical essence. But it's really important that you do simplify your message. Why? Because people are terrible listeners. All of us are really bad listeners. In fact, research indicates that right after we've had a conversation with somebody, right afterwards, we remember only half of what was said to us. But then it gets worse, because 8 hours later, we forget an additional, you know, up to 30%, sometimes even 50%. So best case scenario is from what we had in that conversation, people will remember only 20% of what was said. And you want that 20% to be the good stuff, the stuff that you want them to remember, right? Because, you know, maybe we have some key takeaways, but there's also some fluff in there. We don't want them to remember just the fluff. We want them to remember the key takeaways. So how can you put your message into a way that you better ensure the good stuff is remembered? What I suggest you do is use the rule of three. So what is the rule of three? Well, the rule of three comes down to this. People process information in patterns. It's how we make sense of the world from birth on up. What's the smallest number to create a pattern? Three. So pattern plus brevity equals memorable content. And this isn't something that I just made up myself. This is something that was first talked about by Aristotle in his book, Rhetoric. And there are countless examples of the rule of three throughout history. I'm just going to give you a couple. Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. I came, I saw, I conquered. Vini, vidi, vici. Location, location, location. For those of you who grew up in the United States, think about when you learned about fire safety. What did they tell you to do whenever you caught on fire? Stop, drop, and roll. Yes. So I'm imagining all of you out there saying stop, drop, and roll. They didn't say stop, drop, and roll and call 911. They said stop, drop, and roll, because they knew that science somehow dictated that we present things in threes. So how do you apply the rule of three to the way you communicate? Well, it begins by coming up with your core message. If you had one thing that you wanted people to take away from whatever you are communicating, what would that be? That is your core message. And oftentimes that core message is simple enough to be repeatable. And it's not a question. It's not a paragraph. It is a simple statement that you want them to take away from whatever you are saying to them. Once you have that core message, then you implement the rule of three by coming up with three supporting points for that core message. And I like to think about it as almost like chapters of the story that you are writing. So you have the core message, and then you have chapter one, chapter two, and chapter three. So I decided to apply the rule of three to the way I introduce myself, because what I found, especially early on in this new chapter of my career, was people would say, so what do you do? And I talk for about 5 minutes about all the different things that I could do. And I'm fairly certain they walked away from that conversation knowing less about what I did than what they did initially when I just said hello. So I'm like, okay, I need to apply the rule of three to the way I introduce myself so I'm not confusing people. So I'm going to share my rule of three introduction with you. So if somebody says, so Karen, tell me about Speaker Dynamics, I'll say, well, I'm a communication coach, but I like to think of myself as a confidence creator. So that is my core message. I'm a communication coach, but I like to think of myself as a confidence creator. Simple, easy to say. And then I'll go on and say, I help people to speak with ease, supporting point one, to any audience, whether it's one or 1,000, supporting point two, across any platform, whether that's in person, on camera, or through virtual communication tools. That is supporting point three. So I can say my rule of three introduction in about the time it takes me to get from floor one to floor three. And it is a great thing to pull out anytime you're at a networking event or any sort of gathering. So if you don't have a rule of three introduction for yourself, I would suggest you come up with one because it makes a huge difference. At first, I will tell you, it'll feel awkward, but the more you practice it and the more you allow it to happen in the words that come to you in the moment, the easier it's going to be for you to pull it out and to use it in a way that feels authentic. So that is my rule of three framework that I use for the way I introduce myself. But let's expand it. Let's actually put it into the context of, you know, say a presentation. So you can have your rule of three be generic, supporting point one, supporting point two, supporting point three. Or you can actually be a little bit more specific. So I want to share with you two different specific examples of the rule of three that you can use. So the first one is the one that I would use for a pitch. So that you're pitching an idea, maybe you're trying to do a raise for your startup, whatever it is. This is the format that I typically suggest. So you always begin with your core message, right? That does not change. What's the one thing you want people to take away from your communication, from your presentation, from your speech? But your specific one, two, three supporting points change to this. The first supporting point is, what's the problem? The second supporting point is, what's your solution? And then the third supporting point is, why is this a good idea? You know, why do we care? And why is this the team to bring it to the market? So it's problem, solution, why. That would be the way I would use the rule of three if I were pitching an idea or trying to raise money. The other rule of three specific format that I often teach is one that is Matt Abraham's favorite option as well from Stanford. And that is the what, so what, now what framework. So the what's the situation? The so what, why is this relevant? Why should we care about this? Now what, here is what's going to happen as a result of this. And I've used this often if there's like a change management initiative and you're trying to walk through the process of you know, why this is something that needs to happen. This was the previous state. This is where we're headed. And it also can be used very easily in an ad hoc sort of way. One of the best introductions I ever had was by Matt Abrahams when I was teaching his class at Stanford. And just out of his back pocket, he pulls out the introduction to me. At least I think it was. It seemed very like off the cuff. And he followed the what, so what, now what. He said, so allow me to introduce Karen Reed, who is going to be our guest lecturer today. That was the what. Then he went into the so what. She is an expert in video communication, and she's written multiple books on it. That was the so what. And the now what is, because so many of us are speaking through a camera these days, what she has to teach us is mission critical in the way we're going to have to do business. And that was the now what. So Matt pulled it out. He could easily rely upon that framework and didn't have to think about picking up a piece of paper and reading my bio, which in all likelihood was too long anyway. So the what, so what, now what framework is really handy to rely upon on a regular basis. So how do you use your rule of three in a presentation? Well, I like to think about it as almost like creating a mental scaffolding for your audience. So for example, you state it at the start, you know, you give your core message, and then you're going to say, and I'm going to tell you about X, Y, and Z. you know, and actually I'm going to put it into the breakfast, lunch, and dinner format. So I'm going to talk to you about breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And then you're going to present each point in the order in which it was originally presented. So don't tell people about lunch, dinner, breakfast, because then you are creating cognitive dissonance. You know, present it as first breakfast, go deep on breakfast, talk about lunch, go deep on lunch, and then talk about dinner, go deep on dinner. Make sure you keep it in that proper order because you created that scaffolding in their brains. They want to fill it in as you're going throughout your communication. And then when you get to the end of it, reiterate your rule of three. I just told you about breakfast, lunch, and dinner, just in case you forgot. Redundancy is your friend because remember, you know, what people will remember is severely limited. So you want to keep on hammering home those ideas. So state it at the start, present each point in order, and then reiterate it at the end. And what I really like about the rule of three framework is it's not a matter of just keeping it to those three main points. I would build each of those main points out in sub bullets of three, you know, so that you just have this kind of outline. I like to think about it as, you know, you've got like the big A, big B, big C, and then you go to like 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3 under each of those, you know, main buckets of information. And this helps you to solve the problem of going into a room where you've been told you have, you know, 30 minutes to present. And then suddenly everybody has gone long and you're the last one to go. And they're like, hey, you only have 10 minutes now. And you might freak out and think, okay, I'm just going to chop my presentation horizontally. You know, I'm just going to chop my second half of my presentation. No, instead, I want you to think about chopping your outline vertically, where you're taking out a layer of detail, and then you maintain the overall integrity of your message. So it allows you to be really flexible as your speaking time slot changes. So we have this rule of three framework that is sitting right there that allows people to be able to digest what is truly important in whatever you're communicating. But there are two other pieces of presentation real estate that I always like to share with my audience and focus on. The first is what you say first, the way you open. And I would advocate an unexpected open. You know, the usual way that people start off, and I'm going to put in the presentation context, is, hi, my name is, and I'm going to talk to you about blah, blah, blah. That is really boring. Nobody's going to sit around and you know, pop their heads up from their laptop or look up from their phone. No, like that's expected for you to introduce yourself and introduce your topic. What if instead you grab their attention by doing something completely different? So if any of you have taken any of my workshops or webinars, you know that usually what I begin with is a video of me doing my old news stuff, you know, whether I'm out on location at the State House or I'm doing something where I'm walking along the beach. And that is by design, because I know typically people will then be like, huh, who is that? Oh, that looks like her. Her hair is different. And her shoulder pads are huge. So I do that to grab people's attention purposely, because I know it's going to immediately pull them into whatever I'm teaching that day. But it also highlights the value of having some sort of unexpected way to begin your presentation, your speech, your communication. But obviously not everybody has a video that they can pull out at the beginning of it, and nor is it always appropriate. But here are a couple of different options for an unexpected open. It's simply taking a different approach. You can get real creative with this, but allow me to give you a couple that are more specific that will give you a way to get started. So for example, you can ask your audience a question. There are multiple ways that this is helpful. First of all, it forces them to engage because you're asking them a question. You're asking them to do something. If you are in a small group, or say that you're talking to somebody one-on-one, they have to verbally respond, or you want them to verbally respond. And then suddenly you are collaborating on your content creation. It's not you talking at them, you're talking with them. But it also can be something that you use if it's like a really big group, because you can just ask a question and make them start thinking about something. Like, it's indirect engagement. because suddenly, okay, you're asking them to do something. So ask a rhetorical question and get them to think about it, to put themselves in that situation. One of my favorite ways to use a question is to open a knowledge gap where you throw out a question that they probably don't know the answer to. That will drive them nuts. And they will look to you to fill in that knowledge gap. So the other thing that you can do as an unexpected open is offering some sort of statistic, some sort of fact that might take them by surprise. You remember, you want to get that huh moment. So for example, I would say something like, you know, did you know that giraffes are 30 times more likely to get hit by lightning than people, according to the BBC? Okay, that probably has no relevance to any sort of presentation or speech that I'm going to do, but it's a pretty surprising fact. So I wanted to share that with you. But think about in your presentation, you know, is there a piece of data that made you kind of sit back and take notice? Is there something that you can kick it off with that is going to make them sit up and take notice? You know, can you make it super relevant for them so that they're wanting to listen to you? You need to give them a reason to look up from their phone. So that can be a variety of different things, but force yourself to consider that in advance, because the sooner you get them to pay attention to you, the more likely you are going to be able to keep their attention. So another thing that you can try, if you have the time, is telling a story. You know, taking your content you're about to present that might be fact-based and put it into a lifelike framework. So telling a story is a great strategy based in neuroscience. So those who are listening to stories have a release of dopamine in their brains, because you are activating that reward system in our brains. That's what neuroscience tells us. So in other words, it makes people feel good to hear stories. It also can trigger a release of oxytocin, which increases trust and empathy. And how often are we trying to seek that whenever we're delivering a message? We want people to believe what we're saying, to trust us. Storytellers and their audience also experience something that I find really fascinating. I just learned about this. It's called neural coupling. And this is where the brain activity of the speaker and the audience kind of sync up, and it allows the listener to feel like they're living the story out themselves. So how cool is that? Basically, you're helping them to walk in the shoes of your protagonist. And whenever people are able to do that, they're able to much better relate to what you are telling them. So stories can be extremely effective. I love using them at the beginning if you can, because it pulls people in. But I would say using story interspersed throughout your presentation or any sort of way that you're communicating is really valuable. It changes things up instead of just being a relaying of fact. So just to reiterate, the goal is to start with something that's slightly out of the ordinary. But the open that you choose will, of course, depend upon the audience, the situation, and the time allotted. You don't want to be telling a 5-minute story if you only have 7 minutes to speak. But you can, you know, offer a quick anecdote, perhaps, that'll pull people in. So the second part of the presentation real estate that I wanted to share with you is how you close. And I would advocate an emotional close. Now, it's not emotional like boo-hoo, even though sometimes it may be, but I like to think about an emotional close in the context of one of my favorite books. I've talked about it on here before, called Made to Stick by Chip Heath and Dan Heath. And the goal of making messages emotional, according to Made to Stick, is to make people care, because feelings inspire people to act. So if you are trying to persuade somebody to do something, you want to make that close something that taps into their emotions and that they care about it. Even if it's just a matter of them adopting your way of thinking, you want to make your final words matter, because oftentimes people just peter out at the end of their presentation. How many times have you heard people say, well, that's all I have, or are there any questions? That's such a waste of presentation real estate, because oftentimes the thing that people remember above all else is what you say at the end. And you don't want it to be, well, that's all I have. Are there any questions? So think about what you want to leave them with. And if your goal is to have them take action, you know, ask yourself, what can I say to them that will make them say yes? Sometimes that means pulling the right emotional trigger, the thing that's going to motivate them to agree with what you are wanting them to do. So let me just give you a couple of examples. Maybe what you are proposing can help them make money or save them money. Maybe what you're proposing can help them save time. Or maybe what you're proposing can help save the world. Whatever it is, think about your audience, think about what they care about, and then make sure that your final words are playing to that emotional trigger. So make it relevant to them. Perhaps even consider using a "what's in it for me" statement, because they'll certainly care about that. And then plan it out in advance, because you want to finish strong. You don't want to finish with a whimper. So what is today's big takeaway? Well, you might be a fantastic speaker, which is a wonderful tool to have in your toolbox, but it does not guarantee that what you say will be remembered. So I want to give you a quote from Mae Distick, the aforementioned book, where they say, almost no correlation emerges between speaking talent and the ability to make ideas stick. So what will make your ideas stick? Solid structure. That begins with an unexpected open. Highlights your core message, delivers three supporting points for that core message, and then closes in a way that makes people care. Okay, that was a lot. I warned you, that was a lot. But that's why I wanted to give you an easy way to remember it. I like to always include some sort of bonus content for those of you who want to learn more. And today's bonus content is focused just on that. So if you go to speakerdynamics.com/bonus content, you can download a PDF of the content framework that I just shared with you. So go to speakerdynamics.com/bonus content, and you can download a PDF that spells out the content framework that I just walked you through. So in our next episode, we're going to go deep on this storytelling idea with a master communicator, J.D. Schramm. And he's going to share some of the wisdom that he's imparted to students for years at Stanford, NYU, Columbia, and USC, and countless global clients. And specifically, we'll be talking about using storytelling to bring statistics to life. I know a lot of you are tasked with having to present data and financials and numbers in a way that resonates. And that can be really tough, especially if you have to put it in slide form, ergo the term death by PowerPoint. We are going to address that and how to make story allow those statistics to come to life. So please make sure that you check this out. It's a great episode. And if you are concerned about missing any of the upcoming episodes, I would encourage you to give us a follow, to subscribe. And of course, please tell your friends if you found this to be a valuable podcast, pass it along so we can spread the word. Thank you so much for listening today. Until next time.